When we started writing our thoughts down on paper, it opened up endless possibilities. Ideas could grow beyond the borders of the mind, and it changed the world. Somewhere along the way, we lost touch with paper, distracted by devices made for every purpose except for thinking and focus. On edge, waiting for the next notification. But what if new technology didn't pull us away from paper, but brought us closer to it? Listen. That's not paper. It's the sound of the new Remarkable Paper Pro, rewriting the future. A paper tablet with a true color ink display, gentle reading light, and unheard of tactility. With digital features for taking notes, thinking, and organizing, without any distractions. Paper is about to change the world again. Get your paper tablet at remarkable.com today.
Grab your pitchfork, light your torch, and get ready for inciting a riot. Conventional thinking has been warned, because we're going to gather, and we're going to march, and we're going to blow its f***ing house down.
Hello, rioters, and welcome back to Inciting a Riot, the podcast. I would be your left-wing, dirt-worshipping host, Firelight. Today, I am so privileged, pleased, and honored to welcome back to the show one of my favorite pagan authors, Dorothy Morrison, who is so excited to announce that her seminal classic, Utterly Wicked, Curses, Hexes, and Other Unsavory Notions, is being republished by none other than Wiser Books, who seems to be publishing all the best stuff right now. And that new book is coming out in early May. Dorothy herself has been accused of cultural appropriation because some of what Utterly Wicked discusses has roots in hoodoo, Southern folk conjure. And we do not shy away from that in our discussion. We spend quite a bit of time discussing whether or not she feels that she is engaging in cultural appropriation, whether or not she is trying to profit off of a religious or spiritual belief system that is specifically owned by descendants of an enslaved people. We do touch on that. It's not the entirety of the conversation, and I don't think that by any means we covered every inch possible of the topic. So if you want to write in and ask some questions regarding cultural appropriation in modern paganism, please do. All contact information will be in the show notes, and of course always at the end of the show as well. I am happy to continue to have that conversation about cultural appropriation and modern paganism, because I think that it's an important topic. It's something that we need to discuss, and it's something we don't talk enough about. I think that we are so afraid to poke at our heroes, to poke at our big name pagans, to give a critical eye to what modern paganism looks like, because I think that the modern pagan community is so afraid that if we examine our own flaws, that the entire structure of what modern paganism is will crumble. I hope that I have shown in the last 10 years of doing this show that you can take a critical eye to something that you love and do so because you love it and you want to make it better. If you're learning how to build bridges, you don't just take the first model presented. You don't just take the first design. You continue to work to find the weak points, to try to find a way to build a better bridge. You can even reconstruct the same bridge. You just have to use better materials, use better designs, update it with modern and new ideas and new ways of thinking. So I'm hoping that discussions like this can help to continue the conversation of cultural appropriation inside of modern paganism. That being said, Patreon supporters heard this show first. I know that right now is a pretty tough time with quarantine measures being in place and so many people having lost their jobs. So if you are currently a Patreon supporter, thank you so much. You can, of course, support this show and a lot of other pagan media on patreon.com/incitingprojects. However, if you've got the dollar to spend and you have to choose, I would much rather you see that that your dollar goes to supporting frontline efforts to give personal protective equipment or PPE to doctors, nurses, frontline professionals, mail carriers, the folks that are keeping our society running during this this pandemic. So if you've got the dollar to spend, please don't give it to me. Please give it to those that that absolutely need it. But if you have $2 and you feel like giving it to both places, I'm not going to say no. So I'm happy to continue to try to bring you guys a little bit of love and light and entertainment and joy during this time. So that being said, I've got a big hefty interview with Dorothy Morrison coming up. So enjoy. Dorothy Morrison, welcome back to Inciting a Riot, the podcast. I am so excited to have you here. Welcome, Dorothy.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. I'm so excited to be on your show. Thank you so much for inviting me.
Oh, you are too sweet, too sweet. Do you know the last time that we did this was 7 years ago?
Oh, geez.
I know.
I can't even imagine.
I was like, you know, I should go back and you know, read some of the notes or listen to that and just, you know, maybe have a fun little play on some updates. And I was trying to go back and find it. And I just kept scrolling and scrolling and scrolling. And I was like, I feel old.
Isn't that funny? Because when you're young, you know, you think 7 years is a lifetime.
It's just, well, it's the other side of a decade. And for me, I just, one, I never thought I would be doing this show this long. I mean, it was a lark of a hobby. And, you know, to be able to say, oh, gosh, well, several years into starting my show, I talked to Dorothy Morrison. It was one of the highlights of me doing the show. And then, you know, it's been longer than it was.
You have a partner. Did you not that you did the show with?
So I have another joint show, Velma Nightshade, and we do Inciting a Brouhaha, and it's just sort of once in a blue moon whenever both of our schedules line up. She lives in a different state. I'm here in Chicago. She's out in Middle America, and you know, as we've both gotten busier, it's more of just a, hey, I happen to have 90 minutes on this day at this time. Do you think you have 90 minutes at this day at this time? And so it's a little bit more difficult. But no, this show's always just been me, which is for good or for ill.
Well, the reason I asked you is because she came to an event that I did in Nebraska.
Yes.
And I signed a book for you.
What?
Yes.
What?
She had me sign a book for you.
That is rude, because I've never received that book.
you talk to her about it.
Oh, you better believe me, I'm gonna.
We had a discussion about how to spell Firelight. So I remember this.
I am you better believe she's going to be in some hot water. She owes me a book.
She gave me, and I still have it because I ran across it the other day, she gave me a Sharpie with the name of the show on it.
Yeah, with her show, which is Brouhaha. Yeah, she used to do Sharpies, and she had all sorts of swag. It was a fun time. But Dorothy Morrison, we are here to talk about, first and foremost, the relaunch, the rebirth, the renewal of your, I almost want to call it, I mean, I know that we don't use this term to talk about books, but I almost want to call it a cult classic of a book. Utterly Wicked is getting a relaunch with Wiser Books, who is like the pagan publisher right now. So first of all, congratulations. How did this all come about, ma'am?
You know, Wiltry Press initially published Utterly Wicked. And I was very, very excited about that because with other publishers, I really had to watch what I said. Mm-hmm. And, you know, because everything had to be absolutely politically correct. Mm-hmm. And Willow Tree Press allowed me to be me.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, there were certain things that you used to not be able to say in a book.
Mm-hmm.
You couldn't say, you know, if you do this, you'll fall flat on your ass. You couldn't use that A word, okay, and so on and so forth. And it was really iffy if you could use the word bitch. And Military Press allowed me to do this. And so I was really excited about that. And as things rocked on, though, like all small publishers or some independent publishers, you know, eventually they run into problems. And so they decided that they were only going to publish the fiction side of this with one author. And so my book went out of print, and my novel also went out of print. So it sat here for a while, and it sat here for almost a year.
Mm-hmm.
And finally I decided, you know what, I keep getting emails, you know, with people going, oh my God, I want a copy of this book, but I'm looking, and people want $300 to $500 for it. And I'm thinking, $300 to $500, it's a paper tradeback. I mean, it's a trade paperback. You know, this is ridiculous.
Uh-huh.
And so it just so happens that Judica Ellis and I have known each other for 20 years.
Uh-huh.
And she was working for Weiser, and so I contacted her, and I said, hey, do you think Weiser might be interested in contracting for this? And she says, well, you know, I hope so, but let me check. And so, she said, send me a proposal. And so I did, and they picked it up. And I'm very excited about that because it has been out of print for over a year and a half now. And people are very excited about this.
Oh, well, put me first in line for being excited about this. This is a game-changing book. I mean, you know, the Utterly Wicked, Curses, Hexes, and Other Unsavory Notions is one of those books that I have always put on, you know, the list of 201 books. You know, everybody, you know, so many kinds of pagan publishers out there are really focused on the bread and butter books, you know, that sell. You're going to put it out there and sell it, and you're going to be able to, you know, meet your quotas or whatever on your 101 books, the book about, you know, how to do your color correspondences and what the times of the year mean. And they rehash the same material over and over and over and over and over again. And it's not that different voices can't give old material new life, but at some point, you know, when you've read every 101 book out there, you start looking for, okay, well, what's next? And none of this stuff is really getting to what I really want to know. And you start looking for something with a little bit more teeth in it. You know, maybe something that's a little less nice, or something that's a little bit more down and dirty, or even just books that take on more of a specialization. You know, I want to learn about more about herbs. I want to learn more about working with candles. I want to learn more about, you know, what it means to, you know, some of my favorite books are things like your book Sun Magic, which was forever ago. But I love it because so many books always focus on goddess energy and the moon and that kind of thing. And so it's always nice to see an author that just takes a topic that not a lot of pagan folks are touching and says, well, let's just explore this for 200 pages, you know? So that's why I really enjoyed Utterly Wicked, because it does give you some 201, 301 material.
You know, the thing is that I think there was so much emphasis for so long on the craft becoming mainstream.
Mm-hmm.
So people weren't afraid of witches. Well, you know, there is a reason that they call it the occult. Occult means hidden, you know. And I think, though, what people miss a lot, especially what I call, those people whom I call insta-witches, who read a book and think they're a witch, okay, is that the craft really is about balance. It's about being able to walk between the worlds equally. And everything is not all sweetness and light. Our world, even the mundane world, is not set up that way. If you did not have the dark, you wouldn't know what the light was.
Mm-hmm.
There's so much good for so much bad. There's so much black for so much white. There's so much positive for so much negative. It all has to balance. And Utterly Wicked gives people that balance. You know, there's a workshop that I do called it's actually an ethics workshop, but the subtitle is "Does Uncle Fred Need a Good Killing?" And I weave a scenario where it starts out with a money spell, and you know, is it ethical to do this? Is it ethical to do that? Blah 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 blah. And at the end of it, obviously, Uncle Fred does need a good killing. But there are so many people who go, oh, no, I couldn't possibly do this because Uncle Fred is my blood. But when Uncle Fred puts their child in danger, it's a whole different ballgame. Okay? And you know, one of the things that I talk about in Utterly Wicked is that if you were in the car with a serial killer, you wouldn't give a rat's ass if he was comfortable in his own skin. All you would care about is incapacitating him enough so that you could get away. And so he'd never hurt anybody else again.
Mm-hmm.
And because it is absurd to let people walk all over you. If you're Wiccan, you know, yes, there is the harm none law. But what people forget is they are also part of the harm none. And if they allow other people to harm them, then they themselves are in violation already. So I think this has to do with a lot of common sense. You know, and so I like to, instead of curses and hexes,
mm-hmm.
Sometimes I like to call this psychic self-defense.
Sure.
Because that's exactly what it is. And, you know, people told me I was going to take a lot of flack over writing this book. And I thought, I'm old enough now to where I really don't care. Just bring it.
What kind of flat is it? Is it because, you know, pagan publishers, especially when this book came out, you know, in the early 2000s, you know, cursing, hexing, you know, anything remotely considered to be negative, bad, wicked, evil, anything like that was just completely void in pagan books of that era. Is that the kind of flack that you were expecting?
No, I was expecting flack from practitioners who thought everything was love and light.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and you know, my publisher even told me, you know, this book is going to sell, but don't be offended if some people give it a bad review because, oh my God, this material is strictly taboo in some sectors.
Oh, sure.
And I went, well, you know, okay, but, you know, somebody has got to do this. And if you think it'll sell, then I'm going to write it. But a lot of people don't understand about me is that when I write a book, I really don't write it for my reader. I write it for myself so I've got all my material in one place.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and then if other people like it, hooray, that's wonderful. So the book came out, and it kept getting good reviews. Now, I've been in this business long enough to know the good reviews don't necessarily sell a book. A bad review sells a book.
Sure.
Believe it or not. And, you know, because it gets to be like a train wreck. Somebody says something awful about this book, and then other people have to buy it to see what's wrong with it. I thought I was going to have to pay somebody to give it a bad review.
You know, what's funny is that, I was scrolling through Instagram the other day, and there was an ad where a company had used the text of one of their bad reviews as an advertisement to buy the product. I mean, you're absolutely correct. Yeah. I mean, especially when the bad reviews are just hysterical, you know, hysterical yeah. in you know, almost the archaic sense of hysteria. It's just that notion of complete and utter madness and not even focusing on what the product actually is or what the person's actually selling or something and just deciding to be offended because, oh my gosh, I have to clutch my pearls and, you know, my good Christian sensibilities and, oh, I do declare and it's yes. just so terrible yes. and awful and, oh, you've done a terrible bad thing, you bad, bad man, you. And it's, and yes. you know, you post that online and you say, oh my gosh, I'm the terrible bad, bad man and won't you want to buy the thing that makes me a terrible bad, bad man? And don't we all want to buy the thing that makes us a terrible bad, bad man? So
yes, we do. Yes, we do. Yeah. So, you know, finally I did get some bad reviews. And the other thing I've learned about that is, you know, I'll go through my reviews occasionally, mm-hmm. and somebody will invariably take a pot shot, not at my book, but at me. Okay. And technically, I can go to Amazon and I can say, hey, look, this needs to come down because this has nothing to do with the book, and they would take it down.
Sure.
You know what? I don't do that either. I never do it. Let it stand. I actually made, you know, occasionally there's so much that goes on about cultural appropriation and this and that and so on and so forth. And so somebody will invariably put out a list of big-nosed pagans who have, you know, violated the cultural appropriation laws, blah, 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 blah. And so I'm scrolling through this. I saw one day, and I'm scrolling through this, and by God, I made the list.
Congratulations.
Thank you. But this was so funny to me. I will start with, I was shocked that I made the list. And then I read what they had to say about me, because each one of these people, they had something to say about.
Mm-hmm.
And they said that Dorothy Morrison had made a fortune.
Ooh.
Mm-hmm. Appropriating, wait for it, hoodoo and stuff. Stuff. And I thought, oh my God, if you can't come up with anything more awful than stuff, this is pretty good. Stuff.
Well, have you made a fortune?
No, I haven't made a fortune.
I was going to say, you know, everybody that, you know, listens to the show or reads pagan blogs or whatever and sees that somebody puts a book out or sees that somebody has a show or something, for some reason they think that just because, you know, we're the idiots that put pen to paper or we're the dummies that grabbed a microphone, that somehow we're making all this money off of this. There are approximately zero people that have become wealthy off of selling pagan books.
Well, and here's the thing. Here's what a lot of people don't understand about your standard book contract.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. If you're fortunate enough to get an advance,
mm-hmm.
that is an advance against royalties.
Yes.
And what that actually means is that you have to sell enough books to cover the amount of that check, which your royalty is on those, okay, before you make any actual money other than that.
Uh-huh.
And sometimes in some contracts you have to pay your advance back if your book doesn't make those royalties. But your royalties are usually 10% of the wholesale price of the book.
Which is $2-3 at the most, usually.
Well, not even that, really.
Yeah.
What it is, okay, your cover price, let's say your book sells
yep.
for $16.
Yep.
Okay? So the wholesale price is about $8. And 10% of that is 80 cents.
Uh-huh.
And that's not on books shipped.
Right.
That's on books actually paid for.
Correct.
So say that Barnes & Noble or Amazon or some big bookseller orders 100 copies of your book,
mm-hmm.
and they don't sell them. There is an open-end return policy, and so they can throw those in a box, send them back, and that goes against your royalty.
Right. So if they buy 100 books and you have an underwhelming launch and they only sell 30 of them, 70 of those are coming back, and you better be ready to pay for them.
Well, exactly. And not only that,
mm-hmm.
if the big bookseller does not pay their bill to
mm-hmm.
the publisher, you get nothing.
Right.
Even though those books walked out their door. So, you know, so no. And this is why authors get so upset about their work being pirated. And there seems to be a general consensus that, oh, the community supports you, so you owe us this. But I can promise you, but you know, that's my paycheck. And I can promise you that if somebody had them work for 6 months writing a book, or for 6 months doing any kind of work, whatever work they do, mm-hmm. and at the end of it said, sorry, we're not going to pay you, they'd have a fit.
So let's talk about the fact. So this book came out originally in 2007. It's been around a long time. Your work, your body of work has been around much longer than that. I mean, you were already quite the established name when Utterly Wicked came out. And I know that you had, some dealings with some of the other big publishers out there. And like you said, they sort of strangled your voice quite a bit about, you know, who you wanted to be and your authentic self and your written work. And I remember, I referenced that interview quite often because it sort of gave me an aha moment, a revelatory moment about how certain publishing houses edit their books. And, you know, that they allow some, they allow their authors to edit other authors, because we sort of talked about why some publishing houses' books seem to just all sort of sound the same. And you kind of gave me some light on that. So how has the pagan publishing world changed from, 20 years ago to today, or has it changed?
It has changed a lot. When I started out, publishers wanted you to follow the rules with a Chicago manual style. And I'm not that kind of writer. When I sit down to write a book, And when it comes off the press, I want people to feel as if they're sitting across the table from me having a discussion over a cup of coffee. I am a conversational writer.
Mm-hmm.
Chicago Manual style doesn't allow for that. And so nowadays, it is much easier to do that. Publishers don't seem to be so set on that, because they're interested in selling books, and conversational books sell because they're fun reads.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you want to read an academic book, then go read a textbook. If you want, and I discovered long ago that if you really want to teach somebody something, you have to entertain them.
Mm-hmm.
You've got to hold their attention. And, some of the first pagan books that have been considered classics, I can remember sitting down to read them and reading the same paragraph over and over, thinking, I am so bored, I can't even go on. And
I know the one that I always used to talk about was colloquially known as Uncle Bucky's Big Blue Reader.
Yes.
And it uh-huh. reads like stereo instructions. I mean, some of the big tomes, I guess, that should be our 201 books, they are dense.
yeah. And so, that part has changed, and that's good. Things are also different now for authors that are coming up, because when I first started out, you had a publicist, booked your gigs, so on and so forth, this, that, and the other. That doesn't happen anymore. That is all on the author now. If you're going to tour, you don't have anybody booking that for you. That is all on you. So now it's a lot more work. There are a lot of things online now, which, of course, lends to pirating. Somebody said to me, we were all talking about this new book launch, and somebody said, well, maybe you should put chapters online, a chapter here, a chapter there. And I went, no, I'm not going to do that, because if I had one nickel for every piece of my work that's been pirated and attributed to somebody else over the years,
mm-hmm.
I'd be a billionaire. No, I'm not doing that. You know, I might give you a snippet here, there, and yonder, and I'm very accessible. If somebody's got a question and they email me or they ask me something, you know, on social media, I am happy to respond and give them an answer. But I'm not doing that. Then, of course, there was this thing about, oh, you should do this virtual blah, 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 okay, this virtual stuff. You know, videos, so on and so forth. Well, I think that's good in theory. The problem with that is there has been so much hacking now through computer cameras. I'm not turning mine on. I don't want anybody casing my house through my computer, thank you. I've already had some hacks that I've had to deal with. And you know, my computer camera's not going to be one of them. So, you know, so there are certain things that I won't do. And I guess I'm a dinosaur. Normally, this is an interesting time because we've got all this virus mess going on. But the fact of the matter is, normally, people want face-to-face contact. They want to meet you in person. They want their 5 minutes with you, and they want you to remember their name. And this is how books are sold, and to be honest with you, this is how more books are sold and always will be. And so a lot of things have changed. I understand that everything is going to technology, but you also have glitches with that you don't have when you're in person. And so... You know, people are going to have to deal with that. It's like even with Skype and stuff. I have watched people do this, and sometimes there is a bandwidth problem, and so on and so forth. And so things drag and freeze, and so on and so forth. Now I understand they're having problems with Zoom.
Oh yeah, I hadn't heard of Zoom 2 months ago. I'd never heard of it in my life, and then all of a sudden, it's like the biggest part of my life now. It's so funny. I want to ask because, you know, you brought it up and it gosh, the show is not anything if it's not controversial. You know, you were saying earlier that bad reviews sell books. Well, my show was never more popular than when the entire pagan blogosphere was writing that I was the worst thing to ever happen to pagan podcasting.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. Tens of thousands of downloads a week. And gosh, I was, hey, do you want to write a book? Hey, do you want to do this? Hey, I understand that negative, attention sort of feeds books, but sometimes it offers a good opportunity for self-reflection. So I wanted to ask because you brought it up. The book came out in 2007. And, you know, you do have a wonderful introduction here in the beginning of the book. To the fact that a lot of, you know, a lot of the curses, a lot of the spells, a lot of the tricks, a lot of the things here in the book come from hoodoo. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it is, I don't think that anybody disagrees that it is a wonderful thing to celebrate, cultures that are, that hail from, such a fraught time in our history. You know, you were talking here in the book about how hoodoo hails from, people that were descended from slaves, from folks that came over here from no will, no desire of their own, put into slavery. And this is their spiritual system. This is their, religious work. So I guess I want to first ask, where did you start learning hoodoo? You know, how did you begin on your path to learning hoodoo, voodoo, and the material that's covered in the book?
Okay. Well, to start with, I did not even realize that's what I was doing. I'm not a hoodoo practitioner. I'm a folk magic practitioner. And all of a sudden, folks went, oh, my God, that's what they do in hoodoo. Mm-hmm. Okay, and so really, and besides that, I'm Southern. Now,
sure,
Southerners, I'm really sorry. Southerners cannot appropriate hoodoo; it winds up being part of them. What people don't realize is that Black folks practically raised me, and so I learned as a small child, and then growing up until I moved away from home, lots of things that I didn't even realize I was learning. For example, you know, my mother couldn't always afford to have somebody help out at the house. And so occasionally when she could afford it, so she would hire somebody to come in and not clean the house, but help her clean. Well, there was a woman named Ellen. Now, my older sister was scared to death of her because Ellen was very stern looking. And I wasn't afraid of Ellen at all because I expected everybody to talk to me, and I would force Ellen to talk to me. Well, one day, I think I was 4 or 5 years old, and Ellen walked out of the house. It was during her lunchtime. She walked out of the house, and we had this chinaberry tree outside. And she was walking around the chinaberry tree, and she was muttering. And all of a sudden, she opened her hands, palms up, spit on them, and slapped them together. And so I said, "So Ellen, what are you doing?" And she said, "Honey, I'm just talking to this tree." And as I got older, I realized, way after the fact, after I moved away from home, Ellen was a tree whisperer. And that was an interesting thing. There were other things. I remember a woman who used to babysit me gave me something that I now know is a little Gregory bag. And I was really sick. And to start with, I almost wasn't born. And then I wound up with an infection in my blood. And I had my tonsils needed to come out. The infection was causing my tonsil problem, but they couldn't take my tonsils out until they cleared the infection. So it was a mess. So I spent 6 weeks in the hospital after a tonsillectomy and almost died. She gave me this little bag and told me if I would rub that across my throat every day, that would heal me. And you know what? It did. We had horses. And there was a guy that used to come and shoe our horses. And Herb was older than God when I was little. And just died a few years ago. But he used to also make our quartz. And he would do this with little tiny strips, little thin strips of leather, and it was an endless braid. And he made me a key ring. He taught me how to do it, and he gave me a key ring when I graduated from high school that had one of those on it and told me, "Honey, as long as you have this, you'll always be safe." It was a protection charm.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I grew up with black folks. I grew up with their home, what we thought were home remedies and good luck charms and this and that. And there were a lot of things that I learned that they were teaching me, but I didn't realize that they were until after I was grown and I went, "Oh, my God, that's what this was. That's what that was." So when people say that I appropriated hoodoo, they really don't know what they're talking about. Have I had an actual hoodoo class? No. But I was taught firsthand by some of the best, okay?
Well, and I know, you know, some of what you're talking about reminds me of, I mean, the entire podcast of New World Witchery with Corey and Lane, you know, talking about root work and Southern Conjure and the fact that, you know, so much of those practices, you know, I don't know that I quite have some of that from my Southern roots, but I'm you know, a combination of a Texas hick and a West Virginian hillbilly, you know. Yeah. But and in West Virginia is where I found that a lot more often, you know, that Appalachian granny magic, you know, just the stuff that my good Christian going to church every time the doors were open grandmother or great grandmother, you know, gosh, the things that they would just give you and say, "Oh, well, you know, you have a headache or you have a toothache or whatever. Well, you need this. This is just what you do." You know, "Oh, gosh, we always put those bottles in the tree. You know, oh, we always do this or that or the other." And it's, you know, all the way down to the way that you're supposed to walk through a graveyard or walk next to a graveyard or something during certain times of the year or at night or, you know, those kinds of things. And they work their way into our culture and into, you know, just sort of our childhood, and they become a part of who we are. And, you know, I think that there's no fault in that as far as, you know, the fact that we learn it, we own it, you know, that's who we are. But I wonder, you know, in the time since, you know, since the book has come out, and, you know, maybe since some of those blogs have been written, I know that there's been some really wonderful discussions in recent years around the ethics of smudging. And while, you know, certain cultures don't necessarily have a monopoly on the idea of smudging, it's become a bigger conversation around what should we be smudging with. You know, is it still ethical to use white sage, for example, when that is such an integral part of Native American spirituality? And if you use white sage and you don't also maybe learn about the culture from where it comes from, you know, and maybe the ethics, the history, the knowledge around that, and you're just using it to use it because the book said to use it, you know, is that ethical? Is there an ethic there? And so I wonder, you know, do you have any thoughts around parsing out some of the hoodoo-inspired items, the hoodoo-inspired work in your book, or just in your work in general, and parsing it out and maybe saying, you know, this had a time, this had a place, and this was part of my childhood, but maybe here are other authors, here are other voices that do this work, you know, as part of their authentic culture.
You know, I have a bibliography in the back of the book.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So this lists all kinds of books that I think people ought to read.
Mm-hmm.
Not only, you know, when I do a bibliography, it's not only where I got information from, okay? It's, you know, it is, you know, this is should really be, you know, a reading list for you.
Mm-hmm.
I remember at one time I had been asked to write a Wicca 303 book. And I was antsy about that, and I never wrote it, okay? But I was antsy about it. I was gonna. And I asked the elders from my Wiccan tradition. I'm not Wiccan anymore, but I was at that point, what they thought. Because, you know, I've had formal training. I've had initiations. And you're not supposed to reveal this, and this. And what I was told was that, once the toothpaste is out of the tube, you can't put it back in, Dorothy. And it's been out of the tube for a long time. So, am I stealing from somebody else? Not necessarily, and especially not with hoodoo. Because hoodoo, to start with, is not a religious practice. Voodoo is. Hoodoo is a magical practice. And it depends, the way hoodoo is practiced depends on solely on agricultural resources. You will not find it practiced the same way in Texas that you find it practiced in South Carolina or in Georgia or in Virginia, because your agricultural resources are different. When the enslaved came over, they had to use what they had. Now, all Native American tribes did not use white sage because it wasn't available.
Right.
They might have used sweetgrass instead. They used whatever they had that they felt was going to, you know, was going to purify things. Now, I don't like the smell of burning sage. It makes me think that someone has left their Thanksgiving turkey in the oven too long. it smells like burned up turkey to me. I don't do that. So I have a spray called Spontaneous Combustion that kills negative energy on contact. And so I don't have to deal with the Native Americans over that, okay? But you know, these were things that I grew up with. And besides that, you know, I have... Since I practice folk magic just in general, there are a lot of correlations between European folk magic and what goes on in the South with hoodoo. And, you know, as I said, somebody told me at one point, gosh, you're practicing hoodoo. Well, you know, it was like, really? This is hoodoo? This this cleaning my house with a nasty, filthy rag and tying it to a tree to get rid of my enemy is hoodoo? Really? Well, apparently, people think it is. So, you know, I don't claim to be someone I'm not. I am a folk practitioner, and that's kind of that. When I was Wiccan, okay, I was initiated into the Georgian tradition. And Pat Patterson, whose real name was George, and that's why it's called Georgian, formed this very eclectic tradition, and it was kind of a combination of Gardnerian, Alexandrian stuff with Celtic leanings. But his theory was that you use what works for you and you toss the rest. As a result, you'll seldom find two Georgians who practice the same way and teach the same way. So, you know, I have always practiced magic from my gut. It didn't matter what the color correspondences were that they said I was supposed to use.
Mm-hmm.
Or you know, whatever the moon was doing, am I supposed to do this then, or should I do this then, or do this at another time? No. For example, you know, they always tell you if you want to increase something, you go with the waxing moon, waxing to a full moon. If you want to decrease, you go from the full moon to the dark moon. Well, with the money spell, if I need money, I'm not going to wait to see what the damn moon is doing. If I need cash, I need it now. So I'm going to work. If I need to work that when the moon is going down, I'm going to decrease my financial responsibility.
And that brings me more money. You know, I like that you bring that part out, because that was, I remember reading this so many years ago now, and that was such an aha moment for me we get so programmed to, you know, because of the books that were out there and the way that we all learned, and, you know, we all learned the same basic set of information, is that, you know, you always kind of felt like you had to wait. Like there,
yeah.
And what I've always liked about your writing is that you were like, well, don't wait, just figure out a different angle. I mean, you know, it's instead of increasing the amount of money that I have, we'll decrease the amount of money that I need. You know, that's a great alternate perspective. But I do want, because I think that, you know, I want to just put a pin in this, so to speak. Ha ha, utterly wicked. you know, I'm glad to see, you know, your writing and the way that you speak about the work inside of Utterly Wicked and the history of it. I mean, I think that it is an important distinction that we understand the context of Southern conjure and root work and the way that a lot of these beliefs, practices, spiritual teachings, and just sort of ways of living life have become wrapped up in, you know, in growing up in just certain areas of the country. But the thing that I appreciate and the thing that I think distinguishes your work from being cultural appropriation is the fact that you aren't necessarily claiming ownership and you aren't silencing the voices of others. And I am glad to see that there were so many authors of color in your bibliography. And I don't know if the new version of the book has expounded on that.
Yeah.
I don't know if it's expounded on that at all, but I do know that a number of authors of color have endorsed your book, and you find a lot of them in your bibliography. But I also like that your book isn't just straight, here's a hoodoo 101 book. It is here's a way, you know, if this is what you want to do, here's a way to do it. And here's the way, you know, my aunt taught me, or here's the thing that my, you know, my friend taught me, or my nanny taught me, or whatever. And this is just what has worked for me. And I think that there's a different story. Now, you know, is there, it's always a good idea to unpack where things come from. And I'm glad that your book doesn't shy away from the fact that much of the work inside of it does come from enslaved people. And that when you're talking about spiritual practices that are borrowed, incorporated, derived from the spiritual practices of an enslaved group of people, there is a power dynamic at play that needs to be discussed and acknowledged and honored. And I'm glad that your book does discuss that power dynamic. And I'm glad that you're very open and honest about the power dynamic, is that the fact that, you know, oh, these aren't from white people only, while, you know, it's sort of like discussing smudging, generally speaking. Smudging is by no means only owned by Native Americans. It's the kinds of ways that we have incorporated smudging into our practices. It's the kinds of ways that we incorporate graveyard dirt. You know, African American people are not the only people to work with the dead, but it's the way that they work with the dead that needs to be honored, respected, acknowledged, and taught and learned about.
Well, and you know, this is not just a book about hoodoo, okay?
Right.
People who read the book will discover that I also talked about the Greeks and Romans using cursing tablets. They did it on lead.
Well, and one of one of the big spells at the end, which is just one of my favorites, and I remember adapting it and shoving it into my own Book of Shadows, uses the Hagalaz rune. I mean, you use a lot of runes. There's a lot of Nordic spirituality back here. It's a lot of, you know, the book is a big mishmash.
It's about all the things that I've learned over the years. And, you know, I talk about the evil eye, which a lot of people feel like belongs to the Italians, okay? I talk about Christianity. There are more curses in the Bible than there are blessings. You know, it was kind of like, oh, God got pissed off at Eve because she ate the apple. And so he cast Adam and Eve out. Then suddenly Eve has a menstrual cycle. So he's cursing her. Then you've got the pain of childbirth. I mean, it's, you know, he turned Lot's wife into a pillar of salt.
I'm still trying to master that one. If you ever make that one work, could you send me an email?
Okay, I will. But you know, he destroyed the world by flood and didn't tell anybody but Noah. So, you know, it was almost like the Christian God started cursing, and he liked it, and he got the hang of it, okay? And so, you know, I talk about lots of different cultures in this book. Mm-hmm. And so it's not just, you know, about the Afro-Caribbean traditions. It's not just about Native American traditions. Yes. Okay, one of the spells in the book is about a dream catcher gone bad, and how to make it counterclockwise so that nightmares come through. Okay, and actually, that was one of those things I discovered all by myself. But the dream catcher is used, which is a native, which is attributed to the Native Americans. But so it is a mishmash. And there, you know, with the original version, there were several reviews going, oh, this isn't a hoodoo book. And all I could think was, no, it's not. Surprise. You know, you just thought it was when you when you saw it. No, nobody promoted it that way. So, you know, I want folks to understand that that's not what this is. If you want a hoodoo book, then you read a book by a conjure person, a root worker. You don't read a book by you know, a little southern gal from Texas. This is, you you know, you look and you see what it is you want. And if it's a hoodoo book you want, then by God, that's what you need to do. You know, a lot of conjure people use, some do and some don't, but most of them actually use Psalms from the Bible.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? I don't do that.
And I like that your book is just mostly a collection of, you know, there's a difference. And I think that once you sort of get out of the 101 level, it is time to start learning the difference between spiritual practice and spiritual praxis, P-R-A-X-I-S. And spiritual praxis is, you know, I'm doing these things because they work. It's void of deity. It's void of religion. This is just sort of, you know, the work of stuff, you know, this is doing work. You know, your book is not, it's not a history of religion. This is not about teaching a religious course. It is not an introductory to any one religion or spirituality or another. It's just, listen, if you've got a guy that needs to leave you alone, here's how to make him leave you alone.
Exactly. So yeah, it is a mishmash, you know. This is one of those, and I'm going to be honest with you, I will probably never write another book.
Now, well, because you've gotten so rich.
You know, I've had another book on the back burner, mm-hmm. and it has been moved hard drive to hard drive to hard drive over the years. It's been on the back burner for about 10 years. And it would probably have to take 2 volumes, and it is one of those books that is the amalgamation of everything I've learned.
Sure.
And it was going to be, you know, the final adieu to the writing world. And but here's the thing about that. I don't know that I want to write it, because books really don't sell anymore. You can't make a living writing books anymore unless you're Stephen King or J.K. Rowling. And so I don't know that I want to spend the time doing it. The other thing is, whatever I put out would have to top Utterly Wicked. And I don't think that's going to happen. I do not want to be like these aging rock stars who are forced now to be playing casinos. If you're going to go out on top.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I remember telling other authors when ebooks came in that was the end of our royalties. And they went, oh, no. But you know what? It was. It was the end of being able to make a living writing books. And, you know, you know how this is, you wrote a book, okay? But you generally have 6 months from the date you signed the contract to turn in your first draft. I am not going to sit at my computer and spend 6 months writing a book if it's not going to put food on my table. Because now, with ebooks, it's so easy to steal. For example, you can get an ebook from Amazon. Keep it for, what is it, 48 hours, 72 hours, whatever, and return it. So if you really want it, you can read it and return it and get your money back. No. Uh-uh. You know? So, you know, I just don't feel like it's a good thing for me to do.
So, you know, I wonder now that you're sort of kissing the pagan publishing world goodbye for the time being and running off into the sunset with your many, many millions. What's next for Dorothy Morrison?
Well, I have a business called Wicked Witch Studios. It's wickedwitchstudios.com. It's an online business only. And I've had that business for about, gosh, just right after Utterly Wicked came out is when I started it. And I started it making one-of-a-kind altar cloths. And I did a limited edition of 100, and then I did another limited edition of 100. And then one day I decided that I would like to have my own line of candles and oils. Because magic has always been my focus. I love magic. And so I contacted Jackie Smith at Coventry Creations and said, hey, I've got this idea. I'd like to do this. I'd like to have these particular candles and oils. Here are the titles I want to put on them, and here's what I want them to do. What do you think? And she said, yeah, we're on this. And so the Wicked Witch Mojo line came out. And then I also have products that Coventry does not make. I have a line of sprays. I do some special edition oils. I do Gregory bags. I have an Utterly Wicked Poppet kit. I do all kinds of different products. And not only do I service regular customers, I service about 50 retail stores across the country.
Well, you are just, you're a mogul.
God, I wish I were a mogul.
You're a whole mogul.
But,
product launches and books and all, it's staff. I'm assuming there's staff.
Honey, I don't have a staff. I am a one woman.
You are a staff.
I am the staff, yeah. I always get tickled when people say that because I do everything from product development to supply ordering to boxing the orders myself to shipping them myself. I do the whole nine yards.
So what are you doing right now during this time of quarantine to keep your own spirituality alive?
Well, you know, I'm being creative.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, fortunately for me, sales have decreased because, gosh, people don't have any money right now. Nobody,
sure.
You know, it's working. You know, very few people are able to still work. They've lost jobs. But I still have orders that are coming in and have been. And so, you know, I fill my orders. And when I don't keep a lot of things in stock, for example, if somebody orders a spray, I don't have that bottle of spray sitting just there to stick in a box. I make it right then. When the order comes in, this is when I make the product. And so I'm working magic when I do that. But because sales have gone down some, I am keeping my creativity alive. I'm a jack of many trades, master of none. I have a lot of unfinished projects. One of the things I like to do is I like to piece quilts. And so when I piece a quilt, I weave a spell into it. And so I am going in my sewing closet and getting out things that I hadn't finished that have been sitting there for years because I've been too busy. And I've been making beautiful things and weaving beautiful spells.
I'm so glad that you're able to do. Are you reading anything right now? I mean, I always wonder, you know, what do the pagan authors themselves read? Is there anything on your nightstand?
Well, there is a book that I am reading now, and I'm not sure when it is coming out, but it is Hoodoo Cleansing and Protection Magic by Miss Ada. And so I am reading that for an endorsement. And this is an amazing book. So I wish I knew when its release date was. I think it's probably coming out in the fall. It's Wiser's catalog, and I bet it's going to come out in the fall. But this is the only cleansing and protection magic book I've ever read that isn't boring.
Oh, well, that's good because they're all boring.
No, this is great. This woman at one time worked with Lucky Mojo.
Mm-hmm.
And so anyway, she talks about their personal anecdotes. It's laced with those things that happened, why she does this, why she did that. This worked for her. I love this book. So that's what I'm reading now. I like to read suspense novels. I like James Patterson novels. I like Philippa Gregory novels. Philippa Gregory writes novels that are, she writes about the Tudors.
Mm-hmm.
She's written about all of, separate books on all of Henry VIII's wives. She also writes about other stuff. And I have a connection to her books. When I was writing Everyday Sun Magic, I needed, I was looking at sigils. I needed the Archangel sigils because there is a house blessing in there that uses the Archangels. And so, anyway, I ran across all of them, except I couldn't find one for Uriel. And so I finally found an artist in Texas who had these sigils, but he had done the actual pictures of the archangels in the middle of their sigils. He didn't have one for Uriel either, but I contacted him, and I asked him about it. And he said, oh, my God, I need to do that, but it's going to be over a year before I get that finished. You know, you're welcome to use them if you give me a byline, but, and that was too late. In the meantime, I found the sigils, and they were in the Grimoire of Armadale that is housed in the museum in Paris. And so, fine. So I send them off to my publisher, and she wants dates. And I said, there are no dates. This is public domain. These were never published. They were distributed.
Mm-hmm.
And there was this big ruckus over that. And so I had to go to Omaha for an event. And I didn't have time to mess with it. And I screamed out, Uriel, fix this. And so I packed up, got on the plane, went to Omaha. It was a great event. Came back. I mean, you know, I got to the airport in Omaha, you know, going back. And I needed something to read. And there was a... So I walked into the bookstore, and there was a book, I think it was called The Queen's Fool. And it was a Philippa Gregory book. And I picked it up, paid for it, sat down to wait for my plane, started reading it. And at the beginning of this book, there is a chariot coming down the street. And there are two people in the front, and there's somebody in the back, and this girl can't see who that is because the light is shining on him and there's a glare. And so they stop at the shop. She welcomes him in. She gets three stools out. They want to see her dad. And so when she comes back with the stools, there are only two men sitting there, and she says, where is the third man? And one of the guys says, what third man? And, you know, what? There wasn't a third man. What did he look like? And so she tells them, well, guess what? It was the Archangel Uriel. And the man she was speaking to was John Dee.
Oh, my.
So I knew at that point that everything was going to be okay. And, you know, so interesting things happen to people. And I got that acknowledgement through that novel. When I got home, yes, everything was okay. I had an email from my editor going, oh, duh, I had a facepalm moment. You're right, we can use this.
Well, that's just brilliant. And I love when that kind of kismet happens.
Yeah, synchronicity at work, you know?
So for folks that want to take home a little bit more of Dorothy Morrison, that don't get to call you up on the phone and have a chat on a Sunday morning while finishing their coffee, you have mystery packages coming out. Is that right?
Yes. On May 1st, I always do these wickedly wonderful mystery packages because May is my birthday month, and I think the best way to celebrate my birthday is to offer somebody something that makes them happy. They need a present too. So normally I offer mystery packages that have, when I get an order, I pull three tarot cards, I look at it, I decide what they need in their package, and I ship it off. Now, they don't get to know what cards I pulled, but, you know, because this is just a quick thing.
Mm-hmm.
And they're available in large and small. This year, I'm also offering packages without the reading, which means that I can just put whatever I want to in them. And, you know, it's a mystery. But because Utterly Wicked is due out on May the 1st, I'm also offering those some packages that will come with a an autographed copy of Utterly Wicked. And so that's another way for people to get that book and have it autographed.
Well, that's just so good. And it's so nice to have something like that to look forward to. I mean, we're all cooped up, and my gosh, we're just all a big mound of ice cream and carbs and pizza and delivery and fear and anxiety and uncertainty right now. So it's lovely to have that to look forward to. There's so much to look forward to from you and May. You've got your mystery packages. You've got the relaunch of Utterly Wicked with a new forward from Amy Blackthorne, who is delightful in and of her own right.
And a beautiful new cover by Sabrina Mankiewicz.
Yes, so many cool things coming our way in May this year. Dorothy, thank you so much. I hope it doesn't take us another 7 years to talk.
You know what, honey? It better not. I'm going to hold you to that.
Oh, gosh. Well, thank you so much. It was, it's been such a delight spending my birthday weekend with you on the phone. This was my little treat to myself, was getting to schedule you this weekend. So thank you so much for agreeing to appear on the show. Big, big, big good luck to you in the relaunch of Utterly Wicked. I'm sure you're not going to need it because people have been clamoring for this book, and it's been such a delight and a treasure. And like I have always said, it's just sort of like a cult classic of a book. It's one of those that I don't know has ever been, you know, I've never seen like a ton of like big splashy blogs about it, but it's like everybody has it. It's on their shelf. And I feel like it's one of those that, like, you know, when a witch is just having a real bad time, it's kind of one of those things that their friend brings over. They've got their rosé, they've got their tarot cards, and they've got this book tucked under their arm. And they're like, okay, honey, you need this wine, you need these cards, and here, baby, let Auntie Dorothy help you fix this shit for you.
Well, if Auntie Dorothy brought it, she'd be lugging a bottle of whiskey instead of a bottle of wine. because some things just require good whiskey.
They do. They do. I think that's a great note to end on. Dorothy Morrison, thank you so much for being here on the show today. Folks, if you'd like to get your copy of Utterly Wicked that comes out on May 11th, I want to say, it is currently available for pre-order wherever books are sold. And right now, I'm sitting here looking at the Amazon page, the pre-order price, you get 41% off. You can pre-order a whole book for $9.99. So that's just a crazy, crazy good deal. I know.
All right.
Such a good deal. And there's an audiobook coming out? I mean, my goodness.
Yes. I was very excited. I just found out about that.
That's so neat.
I don't know who is reading it. I have no idea.
I'm gonna have to go look
now. Yes, an audiobook.
Love it. Lisa Ivari, something. Oh, I don't know. That's so cool. I love that we're doing pagan audiobooks now. I'm going to have to throw that on my Audible. I'm so excited. So thank you so much, Dorothy. You have a good rest of your day, and thanks so much for being here.
Thank you so much for having me, and let's do this again real soon.
Absolutely. Bye now.
Bye-bye.
Well, rioters, that is going to do it here for Inciting a Riot, episode 141, Inciting an Utterly Wicked Riot. My big thanks to Dorothy Morrison for coming onto the show and for answering some tough questions. I appreciate any time that a pagan author whose work has received some controversial feedback is willing to sit down and to answer some of the tough questions that are being asked or some of the tough topics that are being brought up regarding their work. Like I said, this conversation is by no means over, so if you have any thoughts on cultural appropriation in the pagan community, please email the show Firelight, Firelyte, @incitingariot.com. incitingariot.com. You can tweet me at incitingariot, facebook.com/incitingariotpodcast. You can also find me, Firelight, the blog, and all other things Riot are found at incitingariot.com. Make sure that you're subscribing to the show if you aren't already. It's available on iTunes and Spotify and Stitcher and the Google and all the things. If there's a streaming service out there and my show isn't on it yet, please let me know that you want it on there and I will find a way to shove my show into the streaming poll or whatever. I'm sorry, it's quarantine and my brain is not braining right now. Once again, small plug, if you do want to contribute to supporting independent pagan media, you can give as little as $1 a month to patreon.com/incitingprojects. Thank you guys so much for tuning in. Thanks for downloading the show. Please like, rate, subscribe. Please leave a comment on iTunes or one of those other streaming services. It does help other people find the show. And it, you know, helps me to know what you guys are liking. If it's been, you know, several months without a comment, sometimes it's like, hey, are people even listening anymore? So if you like the content that's been put out lately, it does help the show. And it helps me to know that you guys are listening by putting out a little comment. I personally prefer the 5-star ones. Those are fun. And not to persuade you in any kind of way, but it was my birthday this weekend and I had to celebrate it in quarantine. So if you'd like to give me a little bit of a birthday present, a nice 5-star rating on iTunes would be a good way to do that. Anyways, thank you guys so much for tuning in. Please, please, please stay safe out there. And if you guys are on the front lines or an essential worker, from the bottom of my heart, thank you so much for doing what you can to keep our society running and healthy so that we can enter whatever the world is going to look like next as a healthy, bonded community. Thanks, guys. And I'm going to leave you. But as always, I will leave you with love and light, Firelight.